Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
All right, stand by, folks. We're going to begin the call here in just a moment. All right, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law, brought to you by Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, it is very important, though, that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express this to everybody in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice or anything close to it has no business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, nobody here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do, were they similarly situated to you, and nothing more. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced as these thoughts and opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just that. They're just people's opinions. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, so on to the next subject. Go over a couple things here very quickly with Your Remedy Is in the Law. First of all, I'd like to take everybody to the homepage, www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. Go to the homepage, look up in the upper right-hand corner, and you'll see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up that has just two items on it, otherwise a blank page. So these two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First, on the left, is the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. Rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you may find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Of course, it's known primarily for its incredibly high win rate nationwide in most traffic cases. That's what it's primarily purchased for as well. But that's not why we have it up here. The reason why it's up here is, especially once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course at least a couple times, and the first time then that you delve into the common law default process, you'll see very, very quickly, for most, almost immediately, that it works as perfectly as a hand-in-hand, as like a real-life homework assignment for the jurisdictionary course. So these core things that you've learned about in jurisdictionary, you now see brought into real life, into play here with the common law default process. And so, of course, you know, given the fact that, again, common law default process is usually for traffic court scenarios generally, no matter how bad the situation is usually not something that's, you know, the end of the world. So if you're not successful at it, then you know, you haven't put yourself in a much worse situation. And then, of course, with it being such an incredibly high win rate, odds are that you will find success with it. And so it's folks feel comfortable dipping their toe in the water, if you will, and it gives them some real-life experience in a real court scenario. Now, of course, both of these items are come with a very, very generous request of a contribution, very, very small contribution, $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default process. And so we hope that you'll pick those up today. All right. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit Your Remedy, you get to the homepage there, you're met with that little blue box that pops up that asks you if you want to continue on or where you were originally requesting to go or stop for a moment and check out Americans Restoring America. And, of course, we've done that because we're hoping that folks will do just that, that they'll explore, that they'll check out what else is to be offered there. And, of course, now your remedy isn't the law. It's just one site among a dozen and a half sites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's a lot of different processes, a lot of different educational materials that are available under the greater umbrella that is Americans Restoring America. And so that's why we have that little prompt that pops up there every time, is because we're trying to get folks to check out and see what else we have available. All right. Now, of course, if you do have any questions about if an information provider would be able to assist you on a particular matter, you're always welcome to email me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Obviously, for Martin Michelson, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. Or you can always call the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Again, that's 1-800-625-4250. Myself and Mr. Everett would be happy to answer any questions that you may have. We'll usually get back to you very, very quickly. All right. On to the next subject. Let's talk about grass fire communications, formerly known as statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. And that's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every page that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. And this could range anywhere from credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS matters, asset protection. Maybe it's veterans' rights that you're after. Maybe it's resetting your status. Whatever it may be, you'll see that subject listed there at statewide communications or grass fire communications. Very, very easy to get yourself set up with that. It's a very, very user-friendly wizard or walkthrough. You know, put your name in here, click next, put your address in here, click next, you know, so on and so forth. As you start to wrap it up, it'll show you this long list. And again, anything really that you could think of, you'll find something or close enough to it in that list of subjects. And so when it's all done, it puts it together. Again, one of the questions is what type of radius are you wanting? Are you wanting to interact with folks that are 5 miles or closer, for example, or 20 miles or closer, you know, so on and so forth. And so when it's all done, it puts you in contact with people right there in your local area that share the same interests that you do. And this is phenomenal for, you know, folks that are looking for maybe a study buddy, you know, or somebody else that might be able to give their opinion, or, you know, maybe has possibly some experience in the field, whatever it is that you're looking at there yourself at that time. And so, of course, the idea here is to put the power of education and the power of communication back in the hands of the common man. Again, as always, if you're going to need legal advice, you need somebody to represent you, then you're just going to have to get an attorney. There's really no way around it. But if there's a place that you could go to, and where you could jump online and say, hey, this happened to me today, maybe the first person comes back with, well, that stinks. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, or as we might even second that sentiment, I don't know how incredibly helpful that's going to be to you. Maybe the next person says, well, I agree with what the first person said, but I would add to that that I would go to my, you know, my courthouse, to my local law library there. Of course, a lot of folks don't even realize that every area is going to have a courthouse, and every courthouse is going to have a law library. But I'd send them there and have them look up these terms. And then here's a link to a really neat educational video that's out on YouTube right now. You know, check that out. Right there, you've changed the game entirely. You've given that individual more education probably than what they've seen, you know, with the last, you know, who knows how many people they've spoke with. And maybe the next person comes in after that and says, all that sounds great, but then on top of that, here's the website, here's Your Remedies in the Law, where there's two or three different educational courses that you can take. for, again, very, very small, very modest contributions that they're requesting, that will completely open your eyes up to, you know, how you could, you know, do your own due diligence on this particular matter. Now, you've changed the game entirely. And again, that's all we're simply trying to do here is to, you know, get the common man back to educating himself or herself. All right. There's, of course, no cost for using GrassFire Communications. It is completely free. Now, we'd like to see everybody when it's budget allows for them to pick up a membership to your Remedies of the Law. Again, a very modest contribution of $10 a month for that. With that $10 monthly contribution, you have a never-ending, really, list of archives. Every call that we have that we've done going back, you know, well over a decade anyway, they're all recorded. You can go back and you can listen, re-listen, dissect, whatever it is that you need to do. But if that's not an option for you today, we have freedomsradio.com. Every call is broadcasted out over Freedoms Radio. You never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. You can go on to Freedoms Radio, completely free of charge, and you can listen to any of these calls. And then, again, when budget allows, pick up your $10 monthly membership there to your Remedy. And now you can check out every call that we've ever had. And so, again, we encourage you to take care of that, to set yourself up with that when you're able. All right, starting to wind down here. Let's go over one last thing here. This portion that we like to call your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider here at your Remedy, you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at your Remedies of the Law. That expense for that information provider goes along with any other expenses that they may have associated with your particular educational process or whatever it is that they're doing. And so that's strictly between you and your information provider when you come aboard. So specifically anything like refunds or credits, you know, for the folks that say, well, what is your refund policy here at your Remedies of the Law? Well, there is none. If there was going to be any credit or refund or anything like that, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. But even then, I would caution folks, that's very few and far between. It's got to be extenuating circumstances. Again, you're always expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time. All right, lastly, with all of the information providers here, all the speakers here at your Remedies of the Law, we want to remind everybody that, of course, these speakers are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. For example, if you disagree with something that an information provider has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but you're expected at all times to remain civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, it looks like that's going to pretty much cover my rant for this evening. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our topic, our speaker for this evening.
Well, thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, if you were born south of Canada, north of Mexico, in one of the 50 Union states, you were born a first-class citizen. However, at some point in time, early in the game, your parents applied for and received a Social Security number for you. You entered into contracts, and without your knowledge, you were turned into a second-class citizen. I was surprised to find that the United States government recognizes two distinct classes of citizens, let alone that my citizenship status had changed. At first, I didn't believe it. It was not until I learned how to use a law library in the county courthouse that I was able to confirm my status. Now, I'm not an attorney, so what I'm saying tonight should not be considered in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice by you. It may be used, however, as the basis for your own research. I'll describe the big picture first, and then I will substantiate the claims made and give a more detailed picture later. You may find the ideas presented tonight conflict with the model of government that you've been taught. You may also find these ideas impossible to believe, and that's totally understandable. The more you listen, the more you may change your filter, the way that you filter information about what the government's doing. If you can't believe any of what I'm saying, I encourage you to go to a website, www.correctmystatus.com, which will transfer you to a website that I've had established for some time called AmericanByBirth.com. There you will find on the top above the header two banners running from right to left. The top banner will say, "Once we were colonists, subject to a king, a primer on jurisdiction." Click on that. Download that PDF. It's about 22, 23 pages. And read it. And reread it. And reread it at least 5 to 10 times. And then understand and connect your dots with the things that I'm talking about this evening and that GW will be bringing to the table this evening. Then underneath that, once you've really grasped a firm understanding of it, read The Greatest Story Never Told, which is written by a gentleman who has since passed on. Wonderful fellow that provided the core introduction for myself a little over 10 years ago. So with that having been said, let me give you this 30,000-foot view. The United States is a unique nation. It was the very first constitutional republic in the history of the world in all time. Before the American Revolution, the King of England, as all kings or monarchs around the world, they own the land and the people in the colonies and in the state that they created. The inhabitants of these colonies were his subjects. And if you do a little research, you'll find that there's a synonym for a subject. It's called a slave. When the war was over, the king signed the Treaty of Peace. And in that treaty, he said that all the land in the former colonies was owned by the people, and all his sovereign powers that he held in the colonies were transferred not to the government of the colonies, but to the people of the colonies. This made all of the citizens of the colonies sovereigns. This has never happened before and since in any other country in the world. In other countries, the government is sovereign. It makes laws for its subject citizens, and it gives them their rights, which is really a misnomer. It's really their given privileges. In the United States, the people were sovereigns. The people were endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And the government was instituted to secure those rights. We the people gave, no, wrong word, delegated a portion of our sovereignty to the state government. And the states gave, nope, wrong word again, delegated a small portion of their sovereignty that we passed on to them, to the federal government, so that the federal government would be strong enough to defend the people. The Constitution for the United States of America describes the power that the states gave to the, delegated to the federal government. If the federal government is defined by the Constitution, and the Constitution says that I am a sovereign, why is it that I feel like a subject? I mean, I own my own home. If I don't pay my property tax, however, the government will go to a court and remove me from my home, just as the courts would remove me from an apartment if I didn't pay the rent. Do I really own the land if someone can take it away from me simply because I don't pay them for the use of it? Could the King of England have taken the land away from him if he did not pay a tax? So long as I don't cause injury to someone's person or property or defraud them, shouldn't I as a sovereign have the right to do anything I want to? Today there are so many rules and regulations that the government has that I think nearly every do is some way, somehow, against the law. So what has happened to my sovereignty? Isn't the government sovereign over me? Is it? Are there any sovereign people left in the United States of America? Well, the truth be told, there are hundreds of thousands, probably millions, of sovereign people in the United States of America, and I'm just one of them. Sovereigns may own their land in allodium. That is, the government does not have a financial interest in the land, and because of this, they do not. These people do not need to pay a property tax, school tax, real estate tax, tax. Only the powers granted, delegated to the federal government in the Constitution for the United States of America, define the laws that they have to follow. This is a very small subset of laws most of us have to follow. Unless they accept benefits from or contract with the federal government, they do not have to pay Social Security tax or federal income tax or resident individual state income tax. They do not need to register their cars or get a driver's license unless they drive commercially. And even that's debatable because driving commercially to make money isn't that a right to life? They can own any kind of gun without a license or permit. I'm talking full select. They do not have to use the same court system that the United States federal citizens do. And I'm certain that most people hearing this tonight are saying to themselves, what I'm saying cannot be true. I know I did when I first heard of it. The government recognizes two distinct classes of citizen, a state citizen and a federal citizen. A state citizen is also called a de jure citizen, and it is typed out or written with the uppercase C as in a name. This person has unalienable natural rights. They're recognized, secured, and protected by his or her state constitution against state actions and against federal intrusion by the Constitution for the United States of America. On the other hand, a federal citizen, also often referred to as a 14th Amendment citizen, a citizen of the United States, a U.S. citizen, a citizen of the District of Columbia, a resident. Well, they have something called civil rights, not constitutional rights. And they're almost equal to natural rights that state citizens have, almost. It's really a focus on who authored their rights or their privileges. If it's from the Congress, it came from man. If it's from the Constitution, it came from the Almighty One. The Constitution merely memorialized it in writing. Federal citizens are subjects of the Congress, and under their protection as a resident of a state, i.e. someone living in one of the several states of the Union, being a United States resident, is a person enfranchised to the federal government. The incorporated United States is defined in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. The individual states may not deny to these persons any federal privileges or immunities that Congress has granted them. This specific class of citizen is a federal citizen under admiralty law, otherwise known as international law, and as such, do not have unalienable common rights recognized, secured, and protected in the constitutions of the states or of the Constitution for the United States of America. They don't have absolute rights. They don't have absolute rights to property. They don't have absolute rights to inheritance. They don't have absolute rights to work or to contract. And they don't have the absolute right to travel, among others. A federal citizen is a taxable entity like a corporation and is subject to pay an excise tax for the privilege that Congress has granted him or her. The rights that most people believe that they have are not natural rights or constitutional rights. They're civil rights, which are actually privileges granted by the Congress. Some of these civil rights parallel the protections afforded in the Bill of Rights, the first eight amendments to the Constitution, understanding that Amendment 9, 10, and 11 are for the states, reserved for the states. But by researching the Civil Rights Act, along with case law decisions involving those rights, it can be shown that these so-called civil rights do not include the other amendments and have only limited application with regards to the Amendments 1 through 8. If you accept any benefit from the federal government or you claim any civil right, you're making an adhesion contract with the federal government. You may not be aware of any adhesion contracts, but the courts certainly are. The other aspect of such a contract is that you will obey every statute that Congress passes. State citizens cannot be subjected to any jurisdiction of law outside the American common law without their knowingly, willingly, intentionally consenting after full disclosure of the terms and conditions, and as such, consent, and must be under agreement, contracted, and sealed by a signature. This is because the Constitution is a compact, it's a contract created and existing in the jurisdiction of the American common law. Therefore, any rights secured thereunder or disabilities limiting the powers of the government also exist in the American common law and in no other jurisdiction provided for that compact. Federal citizens are presumed to be operating in the jurisdiction of commerce, because that is the jurisdiction of their creator, the Congress. So this gives you part of a 30,000-foot overview. I don't want to go into GW's time tonight. I do have one more bit of housekeeping to share with everybody on the call tonight, and that is this. Particularly, this is for, and you know who you are, Ed up in PA and Brian out in Texas. We had a person today that had their 15 minutes at the State Department in a situation where they're leaving the country for work or whatever within 14 days. And under the same circumstances that you two are operating through, they walked out with their pass card and their passport. Now, for other people on this call, I'm not going to get into the nuances about what was difficult about these unique circumstances, but I will say that your remedy is in the law. And I just wanted to share this to encourage you with these unusual circumstances to know that as of today, there was another win, if you would. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to GW. Go ahead, buddy.
Hey. man, so you have to set your clocks back or forward or whatever where you're at?
Yeah, we went forward. We went forward. I've got 9:30 right now, 9:29 Eastern Standard.
All right. Yeah, because I came over to California and I got all mixed up here.
Well, and that's usually what happens to Californians. I'm sorry.
Yep, it is. I'm telling you, you know, I thought, you know, some of the time some of the people around where I live, you know, kind of a little bit nutty, and then I get over here and I go, oh my goodness. But anyway, so I am enjoying myself. I just got up off the mat, or not the mat, the bench, so to speak, and one of my great clients and early converts to becoming a national is his name is Owen. He goes by the moniker Mr. Miyagi, and so he just did a treatment on me at the house here, and they're in there having dinner. And I'm out here on the patio, so talking with you guys. Anyway, it's in fact, Mr. Miyagi. He was he did his card and passport. This is quite some time back, and he got stopped by one of these California cops, and it was kind of funny because, I mean, I get feedback from all different kinds of people on what happens, but this time the cop didn't even run the card. I mean, he was first kind of yelling at Owen and say, "Oh, you need a license," and Owen is just being nice and, "Sir, I travel. I don't drive." And, "Oh, if you're going to be operating a motor vehicle, you need a light." You know, and the guy's going through it. So he's like trying to give him the card, and finally the guy takes the card in his hands, and he's looking at it. "Yeah, you telling me you don't have a license?" All this stuff, and he's like, "Hey, sir, I don't drive. I travel." Anyway, finally the cop just, and by the way, those are pertinent things to say. Any students we have on this call right now, you know, if you learn by osmosis, those are pertinent things to say to an officer because you don't want to say you're driving. For one thing, if you really understand it, you don't drive. Driving is a commercially regulated activity. And if you're in your, you know, automobile and just, you know, traveling down the road and you're not under a commercial contract, and we could talk about that too, but let's just for the time being say you're just doing you're going to work or you're coming back from work or you're going out into wherever you're going, okay? You don't drive. You travel. And so because that takes away that, you know, acquiescing into that jurisdiction, by the way. So anyway, the guy's standing there with it in his hand. He doesn't even go back to his cruiser, doesn't even run the cart. He just sticks it back into Owen's chest and says, "Get out of here." You know, "Yeah, get out of here." Which I think is pretty funny because he might have encountered that before. Probably did. Anyway, this call, as everybody's pretty much aware of, is for correcting your status as a American national, or you can say a state citizen, and from being a piece of property and a franchise of the federal government known as a United States citizen, or a U.S. person, or a U.S. individual, and there's one more other little phrase, resident, okay, legal catch-all phrase when you're looking at federal documents, especially. Even state documents it would be too, but especially federal documents. Resident. That means that you are literally obligated to follow in line with everything that's prescribed for you in their codes and their statutes and regulations, even though you may live in another state other than the District of Columbia, the 10 square miles, or one of its territories, but you're saying, "I am obligated." And so we have to separate ourselves from that. And ways to do that is not by being a resident. It's one of those ways, too. So we accomplish the things that we're doing here by, of course, education, interaction with, you know, the student, with the us as trying to be a teacher and a trainer, and getting the corrected forms in so that we can put into the record, we can put the correct testimony, and we can show our intent and our will to have our birthright, okay, here in America. And for those that have naturalized, believe it or not, they get that right, okay, when they become naturalized. They can correct their status right after the point where they get naturalized. And so we do that, of course, through the United States State Department, the U.S. State Department in Washington, D.C. It's done through with an affidavit, and it's also done with the DS-11 form. And as Michael was beautifully talking about in the run-up to me coming on the call, talking about all the different things that a sovereign, a national, can do. I mean, there's just, when people ask me about the benefits, they're just so vast. There's so many. Besides the number one, and I'll tell you what, everybody talks about Title 26, which is the tax code. And, of course, that's the numero uno that people are really ticked off about. And if you can hear me, you know, if there's anybody listening in that's trying to posture themselves to attack this broadcast, we don't tell anybody to not pay taxes, by the way. We don't tell anybody to do that, okay? That's something you decide to do yourself, and you decide to stop doing, you know, and stop if you're filing. And we're not telling you to stop. We're giving you lots of different options and understanding on the law and the statutes and the code so that you can make up your own mind to what you're going to do, okay? And I have numerous clients that have done all, you know, I mean, numerous different things, okay? As far as you know, those that stop filing, those that still file, and also, in fact, I will make it available if Michael is willing. Okay, I'm going to state this on the call because I keep forgetting to tell him this. But I'll make. I have a awesome accountant, and on her staff she is a licensed DPA, I educated her quite a while back, and she just really got excited, and she's been handling a number of my clients around the country and around, believe it or not, around the globe. People over in Moscow and in Tel Aviv, okay, she's been handling their stuff. And I will make it available for her to be, for anyone on the broadcast that has come in that is now corrected their status. I save her only for those who have a corrected status. Because she understands it really well too, by the way. So you can interact with her name is Taya. You can interact with her if Michael approves, and so, which I think he will. Anyway, just wanted to say that in case there's those, you know, because there is a kind of a philosophy in leaving the system, so to speak. You know, when you it can be a little bit of hair raising to do it super abruptly, and so, and it can add a lot of angst, especially if, you know, you have if you have a loved one that's really close to you that's going to freak out when you do that. But there's kind of a meet in the middle in doing the, you know, when you keep on filing and you're using the best methods to take it down to the just about the practical zero mark. Anyway, we'll move on from that subject. Just wanted to get that out there. I think that's great, you know, what Michael was talking about, another win there, another testimony about somebody else that's just moved through the system and done it in, you know, some extreme circumstance. All we'll say is that on this semi quasi private public call. And so I think we've covered pretty much the nuts and the bolts about how we do this. So we might as well open up the lines there, Michael, and get questions. So if you're
all right, sounds good. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your question or your comment in the question bar this time, and please do not forget to click submit, or we will not see it. First question, we've got Ed in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ed.
Hello, y'all.
Hey, Ed.
Thanks, Michael, first, for mentioning that to me on the call here about two people in your interview. And passport, I gather. Quickly. I tried to open a bank account today, and I don't have a passport. And I presented my WABEN right at the beginning, and they said, I didn't know what to tell them. They said that with all the students they have coming in down in Pittsburgh, they've adopted, this is Pittsburgh National Bank, they've adopted the policy of for people who are non-resident aliens of saying that they need to have two forms of ID. And one was a driver's license, which I had. I don't have a passport yet. And when I have the passport, the driver's license is a lie. I'm not a resident or a citizen. So I'm wondering what I did wrong. I don't like banks as a rule. But Pittsburgh National and another one that I used to like, Dollar Savings Bank in Pittsburgh, they both were started in the 1850s. They go into some, I would imagine, friendly media wars with each other about who was first. And they're really both at about the same time, but they go all the way back. So they're a little more stable than a lot of banks. And my parents used them as well without any ill effects coming from anything the bank ever did or what my parents ever did. They lied up. So I'm kind of wondering what I might do on that score later. And I have another thing I wanted to say, too, that I don't know that I'm confused on it. There's a video now that was sent to me. I have a friend who every time something comes up to prove the American national position wrong, he's got to send it to me. Well, now there's a kid from Mountain. The man, he wasn't a kid.
Okay.
Coming from, let me get his name here, Farmington, Utah, who was just killed by the cops, literally blown apart. Chase Allen is his name. They asked him for ID, didn't have ID, claims he doesn't drive, he travels, and did a bunch of stuff, but the cop looked at his passport and said it means nothing. He read his passport first and said that the cop isn't supposed to ask him these questions, not supposed to pull him over, not supposed to do all this stuff. But he was reading it from the passport. So I have some question about whether that's a new thing on the long forms of the passports or whether that was some made-up deal trying to copy the process you're teaching people. That's the end of what I wanted to ask. So I asked this question. Three questions.
All right. Well, speaking of the video that I haven't seen and what you're you know, what you're saying is, you know, there's bound to be some just crazy situations.
Sure.
Out there, you know, and whatever that was, I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, I've never had any students or anybody encounter such, you know, any kind of weirdness like that. And I don't know, you know, what this kid's demeanor, who this, you know, the cop was or the cops or whatever. But, you know, that is unfortunate. But you're always going to see, just like I was on with one of my guys, traveling over here the other day to California. And we were talking about a number of cases that he had seen, you know, with the IRS going after people. And I said, here's the interesting thing about that picture right there is anytime the IRS wins, it's published.
Yeah.
When they lose, they suppress the heck out of that thing. Okay. And they even have the legal power to seal it. Okay. And so you're only going to be seeing that case from the person who, you know, if they put it out, okay, who won, if they can get a hold of it.
They should take it off the public record.
Yeah, yeah, they do that all the time.
Yeah.
And they do that in other situations, too. So it's, you know, it's just one of those things where they do it by oppression and they do it by omission and commission and omission on a lot of these things. Those kind of things are unfortunate. And your friend that's finding all the things to throw in your face is just, you know,
yeah.
Sounds like some like one of those that's real adversarial anyway. I mean, just. You
yeah,
know,
he is real adversarial.
Just, yeah.
I try to talk him into just loving his wife.
Oh, boy. Well, yep. There's some you just got to give up. But anyway, all right. So any other questions there?
In regards to the bank, what did I do wrong? Or did I do anything wrong?
Oh. Well, I don't think you did anything wrong. They wanted two forms. What they're asking for now is two forms of
ID.
Identification with forms of ID that probably have some, like have your picture on it or something, right?
Yeah, I guess.
And
state
yeah.
Authored, right, you know.
So maybe once we get you through the passport, you know, passport card process, you're going to have that other piece of ID.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, because I handing a bank a W-8BN is going to be a little it's going to be a little tough because most of these people are so compartmentalized and they're so new in these banks. I mean they churn them and burn them fast, and they're always getting moved to another branch. And you have these kids. It seems like I'm a banker now, and they're just wet behind the ears, and they never experienced anything like this. Usually they got to go to their manager, and then sounds like, you know, with your situation, you know, when you presented the W-8BN that you're a non-resident alien, they said, oh, that in that case, we need two forms, okay?
Yeah.
So you'd been,
yeah, they wanted
you'd
to
been
act
good
like
if you had.
Foreigner, period.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally understand. I mean, there are other forms that you can bring in, affidavits that are sworn out by multiple people.
Yeah.
On the same affidavit as
my daughter
you
was
are.
There with.
Huh?
My daughter was there with me. She could
yeah.
have attested to my having been born here within Pennsylvania. But we didn't think of it because we weren't asked.
Okay. Well, I don't quite know what to tell you. You know?
Yeah.
It's,
I don't know. I don't know whether to go try another bank. I like the reputation of the two that I know. And
right.
They have a real highly rated reputation too, but I guess the two failed banks had a real highly rated reputation as well.
Oh yeah, SVB or Silicon
yeah.
Valley Bank.
Yeah, and Signature
that's
Bank
a, that's
up
an
in New York.
One. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, they came out officially, I guess, and said that nobody's going to get hurt that has that's a U.S. citizen. All right, excuse me. Nobody will get hurt that's a taxpayer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that was a coded message or not, but anyway.
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for
the
questions. Okay. All right. Martin, you can bring up the next person there.
All right. That is going to be Dave in Texas. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, GW and Michael and Martin. Appreciate y'all's input.
Hello.
And information. I got two questions. GW, I don't remember if it was a week or two or three weeks ago when you were discussing some of the information on Anna Von Reitz and David Lester Strait. You mentioned one comment that you thought the OID was a dangerous proposition, and I don't know what that is. Can you tell me what that is?
Okay. All right, I will. I'll tell you what it is. So it is a 1099 OID, okay?
Okay.
And it's if you look it up, it's a original issue discount is what the OID stands for, okay? And mostly it's used in the bond system, okay? But like every single piece of paper out there that the IRS puts out, it usually has a dual use, okay?
Okay.
Just like a 1099A, most people, even when I've asked accountants and CPAs, and I say, hey, what do you use a 1099A for? And they'll usually right away, they'll say, abandonment, you know, that the banks use it usually for abandonment of secured property. And they do, by the way. Okay. They'll send you one of those if you go through a foreclosure and whatnot and if you fight it real hard. But the first word under that before abandonment says acquisition. It says acquisition or abandonment of secured property. Okay, so acquisition is totally the opposite of abandonment, right?
Yeah,
acquisition something? Yeah, let me tell you, it is. So that's also, by the way, one of those is also used in the process with this 1099 OID process that I used, okay, back, this was over a decade ago. And that's, by the way, that's one of the reasons why the CID, the Criminal Investigation Division of the IRS, came after me. And then
okay.
Later the DOJ came after me. It was because of the OIDs. And so do I think they're dangerous? No, I know they're dangerous, okay? Because of my corrected status and how I stood on when I was being grilled, okay, compared to the people around me, like the CPA and like a number of other people that were involved, they all went to prison. Okay. I didn't. Okay. The OID process is where, and I'm not, by the way, this call goes anywhere else in the world or any agent's desk. Okay. Or recording. I'm not promoting this in any way, shape, or form. I'm not even kind of under the cuff saying, oh, go do it. Absolutely the opposite, okay?
Right.
So if you understand how money is created and how instruments are monetized through the banking system, okay? If you understand that process, there's actually a way to what's called recoupment, and it's a phrase within the Treasury's, you know, system. It's called recoupment of instruments, okay, where you were the one that actually created the and the monetization process came about, okay? And so, like with a mortgage, okay, you have a big mortgage. And I'm just going to go, you know, here for a few more minutes. You create a mortgage, okay? You have a note, okay, that you sign at the mortgage company, all right? You sign a promissory note. They take that note, they turn it over, they stamp it, paid to the order of, and then a bank official at a level, usually a bank a vice president or above, signs it just like a check on the back, okay? And they take that instrument that they just turned into from a promissory note to a draft, like a check. They deposit it in the private side of the bank, and then they basically transfer it to the public side of the bank, and then they call that they lend that out to you, okay? That the one that signed, that created that note, promissory note, and they just created that you know, $750,000 mortgage or $1 million mortgage out of literally almost out of thin air. And so there is, believe it or not, a process through the IRS to be able to recoup the amount of money that you helped create, identify it in the system, pay the applicable taxes on that and get a refund, okay, sent to you in a treasury check for the rest of it, okay, which were huge checks, by the way, okay, that these clients were getting. Anyway, I taught the process to a CPA. She promised me she would only do it with the people that I brought forward. Well, she didn't. She did about 400 processes with this within about 6 months. So it caused a pretty big stir. And they came down to her like a, like a house of fire. On me, they treated me with pretty much kid gloves. And it wasn't because I'm such a cool, nice guy and I speak so well and, you know, it wasn't none of that. It was because of my corrective status. So, anyway, when I say the OID, I have seen on their websites, okay, David Strait's website, I have seen where they have these different levels that you can buy courses on, and one of them is the 1099 OID process.
Right.
And I don't know, I can't tell you if this guy's a plant, okay? I don't know, all right? If he's there to, you know, like Tim Turner was, you know, back in the day, okay, with the Tim Turner documents or any number of others that were out there that seemed like they were pretty good, but they ended up, you know, as a real liability. I don't know for sure, but I can say I'm staying away, and I get people on pretty much on a weekly basis that have used his process. One of the guys that we just had go through the other day, Michael, just had go through the other day and tried to use his process to do a passport card. So, I mean, not trying to beat anybody down. We're just trying to say, be careful who you're listening to out there, and be careful what you do.
Yeah, that gentleman that you just referenced, GW, had his appointment this morning. and he passed mm-hmm. through with flying colors. He was in, he was out. They didn't kick anything upstairs. They didn't do anything. I think there was probably an inner office memo to all the places that says, when you see this, do that.
Yeah. Awesome.
And did you hear me announce earlier today that the gentleman that you were working with Brother John, that mm-hmm. had a unique situation, he went through his meeting today with the State Department, and even with that unique situation, mm-hmm. there was nothing was kicked around or say come back later or whatever. They went ahead and processed it and said, return in 3 hours and pick up your pass card and passport.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Fair
awesome,
answer, buddy.
Awesome, man. Yeah.
Well, that brings me up to my second question, and thank you for your answer, GW, on the first question. Very good and thorough. My second question is, I have been listening to these calls for over a year, very meticulous and guided in my research, and that's why I've repeatedly asked questions about the other people, David Lester Strait and Anna von Reitz and whatever.
Yeah.
And I have several weeks ago submitted my WABEN and DS-11 and proof of payment to Michael and Bernie, and I've gotten back the documents, and they have been received by state, and I have my meeting with the State Department representative next week. And so you and I, or you and Michael and I, however you all do that, will be talking, I guess, Sunday or Monday. But I thought it might be beneficial to everybody on this call if you could kind of give me an overview of what it is we're going to talk about before my meeting with the State Department.
Ask the questions, Jeff. Do you have your new passport picture and stuff like that? Whatever. That's what he's asking about.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know that. Yeah, so we'll go over some of the stuff right now. Sure. You know, what I do to prep people when Michael brings them, you know, we talk with the students, it's just basically to prep you so that it's fresh in your mind. Okay, you're going to go in the next day, probably, usually, and just want it kind of fresh in your mind so that you are another great situation, you know, because we love winning, you know.
Right.
Unlike a lot of these other supposed gurus out there that have a lot of losses, it's crazy. Anyway, I always tell people to get their a folder together, some kind of a folder, you know, envelope or whatever you're going to put all your information into, and don't just dump it onto the table or the counter as you walk up. Just, you know, pull out one item at a time. So one of the things is, one of the big ones is if I'm asking you, you've had a passport before and it's not expired, okay? And we've already gone over the information about everything that's on the DS-11 form. It's already been approved by me. Michael already sent it. I said, hey, this looks great or whatever. And so it's got all the marks and indications that we need on that form.
Right.
So the affidavit's attached to it, and you've got your pictures taken. You've got maybe you're carrying your birth certificate with you in that folder also, just as a backup. Okay. Now you're going to be turning in your passport and your passport card, and let's say you got it less than 5 years ago or something. They occasionally will tell you, "Hey, sir, you can, you know, save some money if you will fill out this DS-82 instead. Just renew your, you know, passport application because, you know, this you're doing, you know, you already have a valid passport, but you can just renew it. It's like, no. We're correcting information here, and also on top of that, your own instructions tell us that we can provide citizenship evidence with our application. And so that's exactly what I'm doing here. It's as you see here on the form, it says affidavit attached. And by the way, sir or madam, if this was the wrong form to correct information while I have an existing passport, on the second page here, right down here at the bottom, where it lists the passport number, the passport expiration date, and the card number and whatnot, and the little checkbox that says, will I be bringing it to my interview? This is the right form. They always shut up about that time. So that's just one thing that they'll say. Another thing that they'll try to do, and it depends on how, you know, most of them don't. You get one of them every once in a while that tries to tell you, by the way, they'll say, hey, your affidavit doesn't do anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's not going to change anything, you know, and they'll try to be convincing you of that. And so, you know, that's when you can either write down the statement or you can, you know, kind of memorize it. But if they do come up with that and you want to, you know, do more than just say, hey, listen, I want, you know, that just to go with my paperwork because it's very important and, you know, keep a comments to yourself. If you want to say something more than that, you can say, listen, this is my citizenship evidence. This is actually my choice, and that's why I'm able to do this. And by the way, the affidavit is the highest form of truth and fact that you can put into any matter or, you know, a judicial or administrative, you know, situation. And it stands as truth until it's rebutted. And it can only be rebutted by another affidavit that rebuts it point by point with first-hand knowledge of the truth, or, excuse me, first-hand knowledge of the fact, and that they sign it under penalties of perjury. Are you prepared right now to rebut this affidavit with first-hand knowledge of the facts here? And, boy, you know, I mean, if you get to that point, they're really going to – yeah, they can't do it, and they're going to probably shut up pretty fast. So, anyway.
And my passport card expired 60 days ago.
Hmm. Oh, okay. So they're not going to even – so with you, see, in your situation, they're not going to even question that. They're not going to even bring up the DS-82. They're going to know that the DS-11 is V form. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's and also on top of that, you just want to make sure you remember to stay calm, cool, collected. That's always the way to do it because anytime you get nervous, and by the way, nervous and agitated is usually the root of that is fear. And so just remember that our Father said, I did not give you a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. Just say that to yourself and say, I'm getting it done, man. And so go in there with a great attitude and then make sure that they have you sign the application. Because that's the one fiduciary duty that the administrator is supposed to have you do right in front of them. We actually had one of them fail on that. It wasn't too long ago. And they actually had a call call our gal back and go back and you know, sign it. So anyway, yeah, just make sure, you know, they get that done. So that's kinda it. And then you're, you know, depending on which situation you choose the option for, whether the fast, okay, situation, passport, or you're gonna go to a, you know, USPS facility and wait, okay, to get
your... I've got international travel plans and copies of all that available.
Well, You're good to go, bro. You're going to be good. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you, GW. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Sounds great. Sounds great.
All right.
All right. Yeah, Martin.
Yes, sir. All right, so we've got now over on the Freedoms Radio side. Let me take a quick jog over here. Says this is Paul in Illinois. A policeman pulled me over and said, quote, "You are a sovereign citizen," end quote. Mm. Did you know the 10th Amendment? So, Paul, I guess, are you asking our speaker if he knew about the 10th Amendment? If I'm reading that right.
So he's got a question. So you're reading the question. So the cop pulled him over and actually asked him a question. And the cop asked him if he was a sovereign citizen?
Yes.
Huh.
Oh, no.
So that cop was.
He's saying, huh? I think the question for the whole statement. A police pulled me over and said, "You are a sovereign citizen." So the whole statement has the question mark at the end. So he's like, are you, I think what he's saying is, can you believe this? That a policeman pulled me over and said, "You're a sovereign citizen." And then
Yeah, that cop was baiting that kid because there's no such thing as a sovereign citizen. It's an oxymoron. And by the way, for anybody on this call, you never, ever want to say, put those two words together. By the way, that's like, you know, unless you want to be drop kicked. Yeah. Because sovereign is totally different than citizen, which is subject to.
I have a response to that, if it's of any.
Go for it.
Yeah, and Quora, I hope I didn't mess this up. Quora says, asked a question, can you become a citizen of the United States if you're born in California but your parents are not citizens? And I wrote back, you mean aren't citizens of the United States? If so, first allow me to state that this is not a derogatory to you. However, you are woefully ignorant of citizenship status, one with an uppercase C, the other with a lowercase C, which is available to the American people or persons. California is a union state, and as such is a country unto itself. The several United States, or what happened here? I can't do it. My computer froze. I can't read the rest of it. I'm sorry. Let me see if I can get it over here on my phone. Works much better. Because you really want to hear this. If anybody on Quora, if you want, follow me there, because you'll learn that's where I spend a lot of time attempting to educate people on what these differences are, how important it is to know the difference. My phone is faster than my computer. It's crazy. So I said California is a union state, and as such, is a country unto itself. The several United States or states united are considered foreign to each other except in regards to their relations as common members of the Union. The term foreign nations, as used in a statement of the rules that the laws of foreign nations should be approved or in a certain manner, should be considered to mean all nations and states other than that in which the action is brought, and hence one state of the Union is foreign to another state in the Union, in the sense of that rule. And this comes into clarity when you remember that a fugitive from justice is extradited from one union state to another union state. Extradited. And a recent federal statute proves that the Congress still refers to the 50 states as countries when a state court in Alaska needed a federal judge to handle a case overload. The Congress amended Title 28 to make that possible. In its reference of the 50 states, the statute is titled The Assignment of Judges to Courts of the Freely Associated Compact States. Then the Congress refers to these freely associated compact states as countries. Reference subsection B, the Congress consents to the acceptance and retention by any judge so authorized of reimbursement from the countries referred to in subsection A. If you're born in California, you are a union state citizen. As a citizen of one of the several union states, you may elect to become a United States citizen, but heaven only knows why you would. City of Dallas versus Mitchell, 245 Southwest 944, quote, the rights of the individuals are restricted only to the extent that they have been voluntarily surrendered by the citizenship to the agencies of government, end quote. As a citizen of one of the several union states, you have rights and immunities. As a citizen of the United States, you only have privileges. Maxwell versus Dow, 20 SCR 448, page 455, quote, the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the first 8 amendments to the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government, end quote. I hope that answers your question. For more on this matter, read Once We Were Colonists, Subject to a King, a Primer on Jurisdiction. Consider visiting American by Birth, which is a .com. You'll find your reading therein. Then a fellow named David Bryan writes back and says, this answer is sovereign citizen fantasy. You should be read only for whatever limited value it might be as entertainment. So I responded, David, to what degree have you actually investigated the matter in a law library? Are you a law enforcement officer by chance? These are the people I run into who most use the phrase sovereign citizen. You do realize, David, there is no such word or phrase in Black's Law Dictionary. Once you find the word sovereign, the next word in alphabetical order defined is sovereign immunity. So you're parroting a word you were taught as purposeful disinformation. It's like the word tax protester. It's a word phrase meant to infer something negative, just as the sovereign citizen. Blacks define sovereign and Blacks define citizen, but Blacks does not define sovereign citizen. You may be one or you may be the other, but it's impossible in the theory of law to be both. The question was settled by the Supreme Court of the United States. The co-sovereignty of the American people was first recognized by the High Court in this case. Chisholm, X. Rel. versus Georgia. This is 1 L. Ed. 440, 1793, U.S. Lexus 249, 2nd Dallas 419. Quote, to the Constitution of the United States, the term sovereign is totally unknown. There is but one place where it could have been used with propriety, but even in that place it would not, perhaps, have comported with the delicacy of those who ordained and established that Constitution. They might have announced themselves sovereign people of the United States, but certainly conscious of the fact, they avoided the ostentatious declaration. As the state has claimed precedence of the people, so in the same inverted course of things, the government has often claimed precedence of the state. And to this perversion in the second degree, many of the volumes of confusion concerning sovereignty owe their existence. Sovereignty was defined, and those who are sovereign were identified by this case, and it is standing law on sovereignty today. The Supreme Court in Dred Scott versus John F. A. Sanford, 60 U.S. 393, an 1857 decision, is where the Supreme Court stated in relevant part, quote, the words people of the United States and citizens are synonymous terms and mean the same thing. They both describe the political body who, according to our republican institutions, form the sovereignty and who hold the power and conduct the government through their representatives. They are what we familiarly call the sovereign people. And every citizen is one of these people and a constituent member of this class of sovereignty. It is true, every person and every class and description of persons who were at the time of the adoption recognized as citizens in the several states became also citizens of this new political body, but none other. It was formed by them, for them, and their posterity, but for no one else. And the personal rights and privileges guaranteed to citizens of this new sovereignty were intended to embrace those who were then members of the several state communities, or who should afterwards, by birthright or otherwise, naturalization, become members according to the provisions of the Constitution and the principles upon which it was founded. End quote. This is Scott V. Sanford. You'll find further astonishing revelations within the slaughterhouse cases and the legal tender cases. So much for the idea of sovereign citizen. So, David, please, go study and not just rely upon what you're being told. So that was my reply. And I think that I hope I say this tonight just so that you all have a more rounded understanding of the term sovereign citizen and how it is just simply an invention to discriminate you.
Good job.
Yep, thank you.
Can I be heard?
Martin, any right. questions?
Yep. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. Charlie in Oklahoma, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Michael, I was following along when you started on Quorum. And but then when you went to, like, responding to somebody, I don't see that. I mean, all of what you said was helpful, but I guess it's not all there. Or...
I everything I said, I read right off of Quora. I just posted it 5 minutes before the call started.
Huh.
And I read it from Quora.
I'm looking at a title. It says, "Can you become a citizen of the United States if you are born in California but your parents aren't citizens?" And I followed you along as you were reading that. And then you said, so-and-so said, well, that's, you know, that's entertainment or whatever.
Right. Now my reply to him.
I don't see that comment, that's entertainment. I mean, there's – I don't know if I'm on the wrong page or – what?
I don't know what to.
The
I can't
the,
see
the next
what you're.
Thing, the next thing after it says you will find your reading therein, and then it's Michael Edward. Next question: did the release of Trump's tax returns prove anything? That's the next line.
Yeah, that was a comment I made a couple days ago. But all I can tell you is that. It's there because I just read to you, I read off of Quora, not from anywhere else.
Weird. Well, okay. Yeah, I don't know what to say. I went to Quora.com/profile Michael-Edward-20. That's where I'm at.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, you're better than I am. You're better than I am because I tried going on that Quorum. It was like, I couldn't figure it out. And finally, I just said, okay. I'll just have to get it straight from Michael.
Yeah. Well, could I also ask, I looked up, like, I don't understand, what does naturalized citizen mean? And on Google it says, admitted to citizenship of a country. So that means
coming through our front door. That's how all the people from around the world who want to become United States citizens, that's coming through the front door. Unlike the people coming up our Mexican border and down our Canadian border, breaking into our house, if you would. A naturalized citizen is the one who comes in lawfully.
And then as soon as that happens, then it would be recommended or offered, or a person could change their status then at that point, I think is what
immediately, yeah. Yep.
Immediately, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, through the process that you're referencing. So, okay. Thank you. I wish I knew where the rest of your stuff was, but anyway, I saw the first part of it.
Okay. Maybe if you... back, you close out and go back in, may populate or something. I don't know. I'll tell you.
Worth a try.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I'm looking. I just booted up, rebooted now. Cause remember, I said to you my computer locked up. I just rebooted it, and it brought me back to the same page. I'm staring at what I just read a moment ago. I do want to make another comment. If I were pulled over and the officer says, everyone who drives must have a license, I'll ask the officer, sir, do you know the legal definition of the word license? Can you tell me what it is? And he'll say, well, it's permission so you can drive. And I said, no, that's not what license means. Not the legal definition. The legal definition for license is, quote, permission to do that which is otherwise illegal, end quote. So
no,
are you telling me that...
Wait a minute. It doesn't just stop there. It says illegal or immoral. That's where I
correct.
Get really frustrated with.
Right.
Go ahead. Right. I'm sorry.
So you're telling me, officer, that if I want to go to work, I want to travel to work so I can earn money and keep a roof over my family's head and food on the table, and or if my son has an accident and steps on a rusty nail, I got to run him to the emergency room, that because I don't have a card, that I can't do that? Come on, use your head, please. Anyways, back to you.
All right, Martin.
All right, Ed, you had another question, sir?
Yeah, I did. I'm reading here something my friend sent me, and it's a record of the islands of the Northern Mariana thing. Northern Mariana Islands. In section 302, it's actually located on statute at large 90, page 263. And it uses the same phraseology there. I wondered where I'd heard this before. My affidavit says, I, Edward George, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national but not a citizen of the United States. And I think that's what you sent in, Michael. And now I come across this for what's known as a U.S. territory. I, la-di-da, being duly sworn, hereby declare my intention to be a national but not a citizen of the United States. The exact same words. And that's, I right now, I'm thinking I agree more with being a Union state citizen than the phraseology of this one, because that's it's more particularly for the Northern Mariana Islands.
Right. You remember that at one time I used to say Florida, one of the several, whatever, what was that quote?
One of the
freely associated compact states.
Freely associated.
And I got that, from the legislature, that amendment that I quoted. That was the words they used. But it was pointed out to me, as you just did now, that is the same phrase used for the some other territories or possessions of the United States. So I quit using that.
Yeah.
And now when you read any of my emails to you, you read the fine print, my disclaimer, if you would.
Yeah.
You'll have something else written. It says all rights reserved under jurisdiction. Says all rights and remedies reserved. No rights and remedies waived. Jurisdiction is Florida state. Quote, non-domestic to the United States. Semicolon, Florida being one of the collective names of the states which are united by and under the Constitution, end quote. Why did I use that? Because that's the definition number 3 of the term United States.
Yes. So I can change my affidavit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Next thing to work on.
All right.
Besides continuing to work on the passport. I don't know.
Yeah, we got to get you.
We're going to have to have a
celebration when you get your passport.
Oh, absolutely. I'm into celebrating.
Okay. Dance to the music. Celebrate. Celebrate.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm going to check to see if there's a... Or Martin, would you check to see if the person who wrote that question in on Freedom's Radio had a follow-up question, please?
Yeah, let me see. I'm going to refresh. No, no.
Okay. Well, maybe we answered it enough.
All right, Charlie. Looks like Charlie in Oklahoma has another question.
Yes. I'm just curious, Michael. When I went to, let's say, open another browser and just type in Quora.com, it wants an email and password, and I guess I would need to register.
Yeah.
But when I was looking earlier, I just used the link that you gave me. You know, it had your name in it and all that. Do you think that might be the reason I'm not seeing everything you're seeing? Do I have to have an account, or do you know?
I think you have to have an account. But I don't know why you would only see any of it without an account. So I don't know. I don't have an answer for you.
Okay. Fair enough. Thought I'd ask, so okay.
You're welcome. I can't see the board anymore, Martin. Are there any other hands raised?
Yeah, I was just trying to. Yeah, I guess I don't know if it's static on my end or I can't be heard. But Brian in Texas, go ahead.
Hello, Michael, Martin, GW. Thank you for all you do. And, I want to be part of that celebration. I'm looking forward to getting my passport as well. Great news, Michael. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just in chorus with you. Yes.
Is there any way to verify the status once you obtain it, other than getting pulled over?
We had one of the students sent in their affidavit to the voter's registration. And they wrote back and said, we're removing you from our voter registration database. You no longer are a United States citizen.
Yeah, I got a guy that actually sent in let me go to it right here. Okay, come on. Robert. Robert. There he is. Thanks, Ron. Okay, hold on. Let me go over to, maybe it's on, yeah. So, this is kind of interesting. One of my guys put in, kind of did a little backwards, okay? He said, I had put in a request on USCIS.gov to verify I'm a U.S. citizen. Their response letter states, no records responsive to your request were located.
What is USCIS?
I think it's hilarious. Huh? USCIS. I've never been there. But he said it has to do with immigration. USCIS.gov. And he put in their response letter states, no records responsive to your request were located. Which I guess is another way of saying, nope, you're not a U.S. citizen.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. A little backwards.
Two ways of verifying.
What's that?
I said that's two ways of verifying, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the other way.
I guess the airport. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, USCIS. That's what it stands for.
All right. There you have it. I just think it's funny. You know, the their response, no records responsive to your request revocated. So.
Well, I suppose the airport interactions with going through the proper line is also kind of an indicator, too, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
And to the gentleman's question on quorum, I believe that would probably be a profile level specification, maybe, where somebody said they wanted to make their comments views to the public, where Michael did that, where the other people didn't. That's possibly why you're seeing it. The difference is there. Maybe when you log in, you'll be able to see it because you'll be a member of that site. So that's well, I did have one more question. I mean, how many people do y'all suppose have completed this process? And if, you know, if this continues to build, is that going to push, you know, help push NESRA or, you know, whatever going that direction?
Well, so, GW, didn't you tell me that the other fellow, David Strait, whatever, said that there was over 1 million or over 2 million that is processed?
Yeah. There's probably about, you know, 800,000 are probably David Straits and Anna von Wright, which are all a bunch of crap anyway. So I would say that, I mean, I'm laughing about it, and I'm really not happy about it because it really, I'm kind of a purist at heart, and I would rather see somebody doing it right than somebody out there doing it wrong just so I can bash them. You know, because, you know, it's hard. The hardest people, I've got two, you know, different views on this. One view is, I get a lot of students from an international law firm, that's out of Portugal. And they normally are taking U.S. citizens that are applying for a Portuguese passport. By the way, that's just, that gold program just ended. And there's a bunch of countries that have ended their programs with, citizenship, economic citizenship, by the way, that I just found out. But, during a lot of the ride this last year, I was getting a lot of her people. She was sending me to talk them out of renouncing their citizenship and rather correct it. Okay, and a lot of these people were still in the process of getting a second, you know, citizenship anyway, in which she makes money and the whole bit. But those people, for the most part, are never even heard about this stuff before, okay? And they were the easiest to convert. They're the easiest to take through the process. The people that are the toughest, honestly, to take through this process are people that are studying this. And they're studying David Strait and Donna von Wright. And I when I go on with them and do a consultation, you know, it's usually an hour or so or sometimes too. It's like I've got to deconstruct so much error and then build it back up. Whereas the people that are, this is a fresh slate, they're really easy to deal with. And I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying David Strait and Anna von Wright just create a whole lot of work for us that we're going to be doing. Okay. But it's going to be at a later point, and there's a lot of unwinding, okay, of information, and that's my perspective on it. Okay,
I the reason I'm laughing myself is because I've got a good friend that went through David Strait, and he's also doing another one. So, and I'm bringing him to y'all once he can release from the hockey season. I think he'll be here, but right now it conflicts with his game, so.
Sure.
Be prepared. I'm going to be bringing y'all one.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's all I had.
Sure. Good talking with you.
You too.
All right. Next up, we've got Brent in Arizona. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, hey, good evening. Hey. Just a comment on what you guys were just talking about. I happened to be seeing a message from David Strait the other day, and he just recently received apparently he's in communication with the State Department, the Citizenship Status Department of the State Department, and they gave him a call the other day with an update that there's 22 million that have changed their status and that they're doing 40,000 a day for mostly David Strait's people. Some huge numbers.
Interesting.
So we're getting screwed?
Yeah. you know the sound well.
Oh, man.
Here's
who put that meme
pass on an observation. Let me pass on an observation, if I may.
Yeah.
I've been in this field of assisting people like GW information providers with marketing and being a servant to them and assisting them and coordinating calls and things and so forth for nearly 30 years. And my observation with regards to the activity of government, I'm talking about the Department of Justice. So they're the ones that come in with the hammer, is that they will allow an information provider to run 3 years, 5 years, maybe 7 years. And then they'll show up at 3 a.m. in the morning with a SWAT team and take everything that this information provider has, all their computers, everything, and then begin to prosecute this information provider. Now they've got the database of all their customers, and they've got another field to cultivate and harvest that in some cases, it sounds like in this case, will be in the millions. So I'm just sharing MO, modus operandi, something like that, and how they operate. So.
So what is it?
What
is it in a nutshell where the affidavit that David Strait does is wrong or incorrect? Or do you not know?
My goodness. We've gone over this before. Yeah. It depends on which.
Spend 5 minutes with it.
Yeah. It depends on which. Process you're talking about. There's one that was 95 pages. There's one that's 35 pages. A lot of his are, I think, now around 35 pages. And you've got statements in there. Okay, numerous statements that are just off. One of them is where they actually have you stating that you're renouncing your U.S. citizenship, okay? You're renouncing. They use the word renounce. One of the things is you don't want to do that. You don't have to do that, okay? This is not about renouncing, okay, anything. It's about correcting the record because you have a dual status. And so, you know, renouncing your citizenship, you can't do it through an affidavit that you just send to the State Department. It's got to be when you renounce your citizenship, you have to go to a foreign embassy, and you've got to be lining up another citizenship in that time also. Because they used to allow that before, and it created a real problem. And not to go over all that stuff, it's just there's just a bunch of different things. I mean, I just had dinner last Saturday. It was the Saturday before with a gentleman that actually created the website for Anna Von Reitz. And by the way, Anna and David work together. They work independently, and they also work together and do conferences together. And it's just there's I'm not trying to be negative about these people to be for the sake of, you know, we're competing or anything. I don't even think we compete. To tell you the truth, it's like somebody's really going down that road. It's like, hey, go do it, man. See how that works out for you. But there's just so many errors in it. So anyway, that's my thoughts on it.
Super, thanks. That's enough.
All right.
That's all I had.
Brent.
Well, Brent, okay, one thing to point out that you can share with the people on this call within limits is that someone that you know very well was able to interject in criminal litigation, their status, and it ended up at a hearing, I think it was just 10 days ago or something like that, that would have been, under normal circumstances, the swift road to perdition, ended up, the judge actually read the one page or two pages and put the brakes on everything and says, we're going to come back in another month or so, whatever the date was that they sent. You're not going to have this kind of, do you have this kind of support with David Strait or with Anna Von Reitz, whatever?
No. Heck no. I was in that dinner the other day, and the gentleman, his name is Bo. He created the website for the Arizona chapter, and he gets all the chatter and reads all the discussions that are going on the back channels, you know, people talking to each other. And he said, man, there's a lot of people getting arrested. A lot of people are having problems and getting arrested. And so,
wow.
You know, he was about to put in his own paperwork because he had a stack of paperwork that he showed me the very first time we met. And this is a guy that developed the website, donated. He basically donated it, okay? And he's a web developer. He has that kind of a skill. And the other thing is there's, you know, I don't get it, you know, don't talk about this every time, but there's, and I forget the actual name of the channel, but there's a YouTube channel dedicated to talking about David Strait from ex-David Strait people that, and a couple of them had worked with him for over a decade. And if you go and watch the YouTubes on that of the people that are calling in, there's a ton of them that have had really bad experiences, and he's just nowhere to be found. It's not that he's a super bad guy or anything. It's just that the average person can't get a hold of him for, and can't get, you know, any help. It's all web-based. It's all email-based. You can't call him. The same thing, and, you know, be honest with you, I get people calling me all the time and reaching out to me about a guy that I like, okay? His name is Russell J. Gould, okay? Know him personally. He is surrounded by a bunch of people that are real, you know, I don't want to say worshipers, but they just love his, you know, correct parse syntax, grammar, understanding, and doing the proof of the, you know, the claim of the life is what they call it. Okay, that they do. And again, these guys that I had dinner with, they Russell lives very close to him. He has dinner with him quite often, and they still talk and they still interface with each other. But when it comes to, you know, with what you have with Brother John in this, with Michael and Brother John, okay, with being able to put your case together and prep you and help you out and get on conference calls, okay, with you, okay, with on the other side with Russell, you don't have that. You don't. He's kind of isolated. His group around him kind of isolates him from all that. And even though, yes, Russell probably could walk into a court and prevail, you're not probably going to when you go in with a case that has been written in correct Parsi syntax grammar that hardly anybody understands, including the judge. And so, yeah, Russell probably can. And some of his higher-up people can. But what you're seeing over here and with Michael and with Brother John, who's handling and helping out a lot of the these cases that have to do with IRS, they have to do with criminal, you see win over and over again, okay? And that's really a cool place to be. And so,
yeah,
we're on the right team, bro.
yeah, absolutely. I do want to second that what Michael was saying. However, with the caveat that I don't think much of the courts in Arizona, and that I think that what happened with that last hearing was that the court-appointed attorney who was overseeing and being there just as somebody who can answer legal questions for the person I know who is representing himself, they changed. He's actually leaving the practice. He's leaving the public service. And so they appointed somebody else. And the judge wanted to make sure that that other person was there when they scheduled a trial so that they get a time for the trial when everyone's going to be there, including this court-appointed person who doesn't do anything because Nick's the person's representing himself. Mm, so I'll wait until the next trial to find out, you know, whether the courts in Arizona are actually going to do something good or not. I don't think they're at that point right now.
Mm. Gotcha.
But as far as the help, as far as the support, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. Well,
all right. Yep.
We're
going to
keep on praying and keep on moving forward. Go ahead, Martin.
Again, in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, just briefly, earlier caller mentioned maybe going through a different line at the airport to kind of test the status. Now, I'm not understanding that. Like when I go to the airport, I guess there's only one line, maybe international airport. Or can you explain that a little bit more, what you meant?
Okay, well, there's situations where people are, you know, when you walk into an airport, you present your ticket, okay, at the ticket counter, and you present your passport. Some, you know, if they catch it, they find out you're in a, you know, you're categorized as it doesn't really say national, but let's put it this way. You're categorized as somebody that's supposed to be treated like with diplomatic immunity. Okay.
Okay.
Then they're supposed to send you to the line where you're not going to get, you know, the frisking and the taking off of the shoes and the belt and all that stuff. And so, that's what we're talking about.
Okay, so it would be recognized with the paperwork that, this is different than most and will be treated more kindly.
Yes, yes, and it happens very often. It doesn't happen every single time, but it happens more often and more often, you know. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. All right.
All right, John. Next
there any
up,
more callers?
In Iowa, go ahead, John.
Yeah, thank you. Years ago, I listened to Rod Klass and his endeavor in Washington, D.C. and that, and a couple people were in North Carolina. They went to the state trooper's office or something. The one guy went in. The other guy was looking at the bulletin board, and basically they got the authority to shoot the person. The county attorney said, "We'll protect you." And with all that's going on in this country, police are killing people and getting away with it. Oh, yes, there's a big hoopla. They're charged with murder. And then all the charges are dropped down the road. So I said, okay. And I think with more and more people getting their state, their union state national ship, I think it's important to do what I did. I've got a laminated piece of paper. I say, notice to the principals, notice to the agent, notice to the agents, notice to the principals. I am not armed.
Yeah.
Big red letters. I'm telling them right away I'm not armed. And by the way, the best thing to do is roll your window down and put your hands up on the steering wheel. That diffuses the situation right away for the officer. And I have important jurisdictional questions why my rights, freedom, and liberties are being violated. I do not wish any controversy, therefore, I wish to remain silent. I do not consent to any unrevealed contracts, trusts, or pledges. I do not consent to any searches. Now, I've changed this. I had on this one, I want an attorney to be present. I don't like the word attorney. The word means twist and turn. The Constitution gives us the right of assistance to counsel, so that's what I've put on my new one. I want assistance to counsel, and actually any one of you can be my counsel. I don't want a bar attorney whose first responsibility is to the court and not me. Actually, I don't want an attorney anyhow because I think our paperwork with a national ship should alleviate it. But I said this information, and this is in big red letters, this information should satisfy the requirements of Escobedo, Miranda, and Terry versus Ohio. Then I say, all rights reserved, put my name. And to take care of jurisdiction, I say, temporary place of housekeeping, Davenport, Iowa, all within the small United States of America, not state of Iowa, city of Davenport, county of Scott, or United States, nor do I ever travel within designations other than land and common law jurisdiction. I am zip code exempt, domestic mailing manual. I do not consent to any public official's fraud. I demand full disclosure before I can answer any questions. This, to me, is important. Everybody should accept the oath of every public official's office, or you can't ever hold them accountable. I hereby accept the oath of office of any person detaining me or in any way restricting my rights, liberties, or my pursuit of happiness. I validate your required oath as an equity contract between you and me from the first day you took office. If you look in your state code, every state requires any public official to have an oath of office and a bond. So then I go further. I'm requesting your delegation of authority over this living man to include your oath of office, your bond as required by law, your bar card if appropriate, bid bonds, valid identification to include name, address, social security number, badge number, IRS forms and documents, and any other identification may be used to help sort out any legal questions concerning the deprivation of my rights and liberties. Then all this is in bold ink, black, and then I put in red, I am not in any way interfering with your official duties. And that's important because they put that on there no matter what, if they arrest you for walking across the street, they'll throw that in there, interference with official acts, so I solve that problem. I have the right to demand that you honor your oath of office and to provide me with why I'm being detained and or my liberties restricted. I do not want controversy, so will remain silent until I have all the above important questions answered. Please respect me by honoring your oath and providing me with all the above. As is my custom, I reserve all my rights, and I signed it and dated. And I actually have a seal. Black's Third Dictionary says the court is a suit of the sovereign and usually has a seal. So anyhow, I showed the deputy who was running for sheriff, and I said, Pete, I said, what would you do if you stopped me for a traffic violation and I handed you this? And he took his time, he read it. He said, well, I would hand it back to you and say, have a nice day, sir. I yield.
Okay. Okay. I want to respond to this because this is supposed to be, you know, DW's call here tonight. And the reason I want to respond to it is great for you. I don't want to take anything away from what you just stated on it for the record here with what you've done and your due diligence and writing that down. I think that's great. I think it's awesome. And you know, I would throw this out there that there's, if you do that, yes, I'm pretty sure you can prevail. And there was quite a little bit with that. And for most women, that's going to be a little bit of a hard thing for them. Okay. And what we're doing here on this call is we're talking about correcting your status. Okay. And using the passport and passport card to travel. Okay. When you're in a moving vehicle, okay, which is, by the way, and I use this phrase carefully because it was coined by Judge Bernie Brashears, a peaceful solution, okay? Just like on Saturday nights when we go over, and Bernie does a great job, and I operate this way too, by the way, with trusts and a corporation soul. And I have a lot of clients that have them and that still file in the system, but still are they use the corporation soul and save so much in taxes. It's unbelievable. Okay. It's a peaceful solution. Okay. They don't have to be out there and have a card like you just expressed right there and you know, talk to people and give them the, what for. Okay. It's a very, very peaceful solution even within their own code, okay? And by the way, what we're trying to help people to understand here is within their own code, the cops can run these passport cards in their system if they choose to. And it's very, very, very important just to stay calm and cool and not be agitated and just hand them the card, okay? And what I want to say is what we're trying to give the option for here on this call is an easy, peaceful solution, okay? Rather than having to memorize a lot of stuff and, you know, have a card like that. And I'm not trying to take away from that. You can do that. But this call is about, you know, getting your status corrected and utilizing it this way. We've got a lot of people that have been very, very successful at that. And you're going to always hear some crazy stories about somebody that walked into a sheriff's office and, you know, they shot him or whatever. And who knows, you know, all of that story. But for the most part, we've got some amazing testimonies from people that have used this process and are having some very peaceful solutions. if anybody else wants to chime in here, like Michael or anybody else.
No, your response was perfect.
Okay.
All right, one more quick refresh, but I think that's probably going to do us, which is just about time.
Super.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in to have my dinner.
Did you get John and Kent? Did you get John? Did he come back?
That was the last one to speak.
Okay. So Kent was here. Where's Kent? There he is.
Yeah, Kent already. Okay, well, now we have some more. Ask and you shall receive. So Daniel in California, go ahead.
Hello, Michael, and I really was listening to you. I have some concern. I don't know if this is the right call for this or what, but I'm a 74-year-old man and live in California for like 73 years. I'm in Georgia now, and I've been thinking about correcting my status. But it's one thing Michael said, about at least you'll have on your grave known he was a free man. And that really kind of opened my eyes. But I received like a little bit over $2,000 a month from Social Security. And I'm disabled. I'm in a wheelchair. And, I just don't get a lot of stuff. And I want to leave something for my great grandkids if I could, but I wanted to find out if I could continue to collect Social Security and then possibly get on like the soul, and then where I could, you know, not hide my name, but I just wanted to know your thoughts on that. Sorry for talking so long.
No, no problem at all. I read you loud and clear, and I feel where you're coming from, man. You were talking about, you know, he died a free man, you know. The good news here is, and I want to tell you, is that I have never seen a single situation where correcting your status has anything to do to disrupt anything like Social Security, pension benefits, disabled benefits, things like that. Never, never, never. In fact, I've gone on calls with people that have been doing this for longer than I have, and I've been doing it now over 15 years as of the 8th of March of from 2008. So and what I want to tell you is that on these calls that I used to go on, good news travels fast, but bad news travels at the speed of light. If there was anybody that had any type of situation where they're Social Security was disrupted or anything like that, let me tell you, there'd be emails and calls there'd be screaming, and we'd be dealing with it. We've never dealt with it one time. So
wow.
I want you to rest, there with that thought that no, it doesn't affect it one way or another. Okay. That's the good news. You were talking about, I think you mentioned a little bit about the soul, corporation soul and things
yes.
like that. And, those type of things are, of course, good to do. You know, with your grandkids, it's really, really imperative, you know, when you're leaving for them, something for them with the religious organization or the religious society that you're going to create, that it's really contingent upon you, okay, like the Bible says, like the Word of God says, to train up your children or your grandchildren, okay, to be able to handle such a thing. And it would really, you know, it's really one of those things where you've got to train them to be able to take it over, you know, when you make that transition to the kingdom of heaven someday. And, you know, you want to make sure that they're in a place where they are, able to understand and take over the mission, the accounts and things like that. It's really contingent upon you to train them during that period of time. You know, one of those cool things too.
You know, I'm sure I'm either going to meet you or do some business after this RV come in, because I just really love what you're saying. And I like what Michael be talking about also. And anyway, thank you.
That's great.
I heard something real different. Thank you very much.
Wow, you're welcome. I hope we do get to meet someday.
Sure.
All right.
All right. Any other questions before we wrap it up for the night? Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if there's any final questions. If not, we're going to say good evening to our speaker. Kent in West Virginia, go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Greg, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions or make a couple of comments. You were talking about the case before that happened in Utah where the guy was shot. Wasn't there something about him having a gun in the car or a holstered weapon?
I was responding to somebody talking about that, but I don't know of that case myself. I have no
idea. Oh, you don't know? Okay. Yeah, I think there might be a little more to it. Now, when you were talking about the IDs before with Ed going to the bank and them wanting two IDs as a non-resident alien, claiming that they have non-resident alien students in the Pittsburgh area. What would you suggest for someone who goes through the passport process that they would use as a second ID, which would fall in the category of a quote-unquote governmental ID that it would appear the bank is asking for?
Well, you know, You got your your one ID with the picture on it, which is the passport or the passport card. And most people, you know, only probably a couple of people on this call excluded, have a picture ID with that's a license. Okay, a driver's license. Now, some people, you know, want to be purist and they want to get rid of that license and get rid of it. I don't. And a number of my clients haven't. In fact, I just took another client through this. He was he's a Filipino, a naturalized Filipino man. He's in the San Francisco area. And he is the second one that I've actually been through this process that where he corrected his status on his driver's license. Okay. Through renewing when he went in to renew his driver's license, and there's a process to do that that we've just kind of doing by osmosis, because you're able to go into think about this. Once you correct your status and you're a national now, now you have all your God-given rights. Okay, and there's that one Supreme Court case that says this. It says that the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute, codes, or regulations that are repugnant to the Constitution. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So even if you hold a license or if you accepted a license as a national, as somebody that, with all their God-given rights secured to them, no part of that contract, okay, of that license that is repugnant to the Constitution stands anymore, which is very, very cool, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So are you suggesting that each state has some process for the driver's license, be it getting a new one or a renewal, wherein you are correcting your status and they immediately, upon running the license without the passport card, would know what your status is?
Well, I could. I wouldn't want to rely on that. Okay, but okay. I've had a couple of them do it so far where they actually. By the way, my battery keeps on saying it's low and it's gonna. So if I cut out, I cut out. But we're at the end of the call here. But I'll talk fast. Okay, so when you walk in to renew your license, okay, on the form itself, it's going to have it's only going to have several options for you to state that you're a U.S. citizen or you're a permanent non-citizen resident or something to this effect, but there's no option to check national on there or American national. And so mm-hmm. when I've had a couple of my people go in and ask it, and to say, state it like this, listen, I want to renew the license, but I have corrected my status with the U.S. State Department. Here is my affidavit of citizenship status. By the way, it's never been rebutted. It's with the Secretary of State's office. They never rebutted it. They've corrected my status. Here is my status as a national. Now, I have a problem here, okay? On your form, it does not give me the option of checking a box that says I'm a national here. Okay. And because I do not want to perjure myself and say that I'm something that I'm not, I have a problem. So what's the remedy here? And then you just ask them, what's the remedy? And you give it to them and you let them bring you the remedy. And so far it's worked. Okay. They come back and say, hey, listen, what we're going to do is we're going to allow you to sign it this way, and we're going to upload your affidavit of citizenship status with your driver's license information so that it comes up whenever they run your license. This is what they're telling mm-hmm. them. They've had mm-hmm. two of them so far. I mean, I don't have lots of them, but I've got two of them so far that have done that, and they're like, mm-hmm. they call me back. I'm like, hey, you wouldn't believe it. They did it. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. If you're nice to them and you just say, hey, listen, what's the remedy for this? Because I do not want to perjure myself, okay? Because my status mm-hmm. has changed now. So that's what they've been doing, and I would say, you know, that they feel really good about having their license now.
Okay, thank you. The third thing, you were talking about the USCIS and the fact that the gentleman kind of did this backwards, where he wanted verification that he was a U.S. citizen. I wouldn't find, and I'd like your comments on this, I wouldn't find the answer they gave him to be unusual because, first of all, that U.S. citizenship is by presumption. And if you were born on a state and you never swore an oath, I'm not talking about somebody who was naturalized and swore an oath, but someone born on a state and never swore an oath, I don't see why they would have any evidence other than by presumption that they could bring forth and answer that question any other way. Am I mistaken here when someone does request?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah. I just think it's kind of funny myself. You know, people are trying to, they're trying to figure it out. You know, I want verification. It's like, okay, whatever.
Okay. And lastly, regarding John in Iowa, when you were saying, you know, that what he did, and, you know, you don't have any problem with that, but that, you know, may be more than you have to do if you're correcting your status. Don't you think it's a good idea, though, to have a backup such as entering a contract or accepting as a contract somebody's oath of office or oath of allegiance?
Yeah. I mean, it's great if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's great. Well, no, I was separating. I want to be clear. I was separating the fact that he's using a card that he's handing to someone on the side of the road or wherever versus having a contract with these people individually for the oath of office.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. That does it before your phone dies. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Thank you so
all
much.
Right, we're going out.
For sticking it in there with us. I know we kept you extra long tonight, but a lot of good questions and a lot of good information you were giving us there, so we appreciate you as always.
Red.
All right.
Good night, folks.
Yeah, good night.
All right, folks, join us again tomorrow night. Watch out for your calendars. Check your emails. You'll see coming up there for tomorrow night's call, same time, same place. Mr. Edwards, do you have anything before we close out? I don't think.
Yeah, thank you. There are people on this call that are here for the first time, and they don't know how to reach me. So the number to start with is 800-625-4250. That number is 800-625-4250. If you use, if you have a Panera's, and you don't mind being called Michael, just when you want to get a free cup of coffee, just use 800-625-4250, and you'll be provided a cup of coffee on me. I'm paying for it, so it's limitless. Enjoy. So we have someone on Freedoms Radio that asked about how to, what's the next step in moving forward. The next step moving forward is to call 1-800-625-4250. When I get that, I will share with you my direct cell phone number. You will always have that, and just we'll be able to reach out anytime you need. That's it, Martin. Thank you. Tomorrow night will be John returning. John is the litigating portion of the team, and he's always got something awesome and wonderful to share, so I would be here for that. You who have foreign currency, the trusts that Bernie offers have never come under attack in the near 30 years that he's been offering them, but there's never been this kind of value or money on the table in these 30 years. I'm fully expecting attacks after the event takes place, and the scuttlebutt that I'm hearing right now is pretty imminent. And if that's the case, if that's finally true, I mean, I've been here for 17 years holding currency. So if it's finally true and coming about, there's going to be a lot of changes here at Your Remedy Is in the Law, Americans Restoring America. We're going to have our own call center, if you would, to deal with the numbers of people. We'll be actually actively advertising on a national level, directing people to Americans Restoring America and our nightly conference calls. It's going to have a lot of things change, but it's all going to be changing for the better to better serve you, which is what we're here for. So, again, the number is 1-800-625-4250. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.